To sync this podcast to the episode, pause now and hit play right after the previously on.
Hi, I'm Cindy Brady. Not really, I'm actually Tony Graffia, writer, executive producer of Outlander, I'm here with Meryl Davis.
Hello.
Our illustrious executive producer extraordinaire, but she always teases me because
Tony tends to freeze when we do these. We decide who introduces the episode, and often we'll decide Tony, and then it starts and she'll freeze. And we had this very funny moment actually at an award show once where we're on the red carpet being interviewed, and Tony once again had a Cindy Brady moment. So that's what we call her.
They asked a really hard question.
She froze.
I froze. I threw it to you because I knew you could answer it probably better than me.
Yes. But anyway, aside from our little story, this is called Providence by Karen Campbell.
Episode 412. And this is one of my favorite episodes. I'm very excited to be doing this podcast. And today we're drinking a French wine in honor of Father Alexandre, a Sancerre.
Yes.
I was introduced to that wine by one of our amazing directors, Anna Forrester, who directed the wedding episode, because when I got to Scotland, they didn't have any Napa Valley. They didn't have my usual California wines, and I had to expand my, and Anna Forrester got me one at lunch and introduced me. So shout out to Anna.
But jumping right in here, obviously, if people remember from the last episode, we saw the start of this gauntlet.
Right. This scene was actually written for this episode, but when we, during editing, as happens sometimes, we saw the previous episode and decided that a better cliffhanger ending would be to start the gauntlet in 411 and then see Roger getting halfway through and wonder, did he make it? And here we find out he kind of crashed and burned on the gauntlet. That's where, of course, the little kid comes up and grabs his beard, because they didn't have beards back in those days. Remember that Roger shaved it when he came through the stones, and the little kid is sort of delighted by the dog face, and we made a decision not to subtitle that because we didn't want...
We'll find that out later.
We'll find out later that it means dog face. This episode, we were talking before the podcast started about some of the changes from the book. And, you know, when we were going through them, there are quite a few. And, you know, we just wanted to explain to everybody that a lot of that is done. Basically, we often have to simplify, not just for production reasons, but also for to get in all the story that we have to fit in as the season comes to a close. There's just so much. And here, here's where Brianna is going to learn that Stephen Bonnet is alive.
It was captured, and she has a choice whether or not she obviously wants to go see him.
Right. In the book, the Stephen Bonnet being at the jail story was more complicated. It had to do with a character that we didn't end up using. There was a storyline from the book we did as our second Pollyanne, episode,
right?
the Rufus storyline, and we did not pursue the Pollyanne murder mystery, so we didn't have a character of Murchison.
Correct. Well, we also didn't in the book, obviously. Murtaugh's not alive, and that, as we've said so many times before,
that's one of the main reasons, yeah.
Yeah, we have, you know, everything has to change slightly.
Yeah, when we kept Murtaugh alive, we had to make room for him, his story arcs, and that meant leaving some other things out. So, you know, we always, you know, use... the beginning of the season, we look at the whole book and everyone has their favorite parts and we try to hit the favorites.
We still don't get them all.
No, if we don't get them, we slip them in maybe in the next season. We've done that a lot. So if we did miss some of your favorite stuff from this book, you know, keep an eye out next season, because we are hard at work on season 5, and there might be some stuff there that's some of our favorite stuff from season 4 that didn't that we didn't have room for.
Do we want to talk a little bit here about the decision in the writer room and deciding kind of Brianna and her decision to go see Bonnet and why, and about her forgiveness of, or trying to forgive him? Because really, you know, I don't think she's ever going to forgive him, but.
No, you know, this is advice from Jamie. You know, he's written her this letter. We introduced the letter, you know, planted the seeds of that in the last episode, where John Gray brings this letter that she's hesitant to look at. She was still angry at Jamie in that episode. And as the months go by, she cools off a bit and realizes, you know, that he is out there trying to find Roger. And also, it's the end of a conversation from back in 410 when she ends up asking Jamie, you know, how did you feel after with Jack Randall? Did you ever forgive him? You know, how did you get over it? And she expresses that she has thought about killing Bonnet and getting revenge. And Jamie's sort of in the moment, he's put on the spot, and he knows this isn't a good idea, but he just doesn't have all the answers at his fingertips. So I think he's been ruminating on this on his journey and worrying that she's going to do something crazy and try to, you know, get revenge, or at the very least carry around all this anger in her heart, which is not good for her or this child she's carrying. So Jamie, I like that he's the kind of dad that has thought about this, taken the time out, even on his journey, to write this letter that says, I've been thinking about your question, and, you know, here's some more thoughts on that. Don't wreck your life carrying this anger. Don't go after this man. And she, you know, even though she's mad at him, she reads that, and I think, and I love the last line of the letter is something like, with a heart full of love, you know, your father, your, and he signs it Da, right. You know, and I think it makes an impression on her, and it she's following his advice here.
Yeah. Now, a lot of people obviously will notice and that Jamie and Claire really aren't in this episode, and we certainly know that Jamie and Claire are the heart and soul of this series, and we Absolutely. Love them, and obviously they're our favorites. But if you've read the book, as we all have, that, you know, this is a book where Brianna and Roger take a little more front and center, and in order to set up their story, and even trying to set up their story, we don't even give them probably enough time that they deserve. But it was necessary to give them a little more time. But obviously, we love Jamie and Claire, and know that they are the heart and soul of the series. I think we wanted here to give Roger, obviously, some sort of, you know, we were like, how is Roger dealing in, you know, basically being a slave in this village? He's not a full member of the Mohawk because he obviously didn't make it through the gauntlet. What is happening here? We also, you know, spoke with our Mohawk consultants about, you know, certain things that would be considered rude in that village that Roger, even though he's a historian, might not know.
Right.
And I just want to say right now, forgive me if I butcher some people's names, because I just have never been able to get certain names down.
This is Joey Yan.
And the cutest baby ever.
And that is a cute baby. And, you know, obviously we wanted Roger to make a connection with someone in the village. she's, you know, having fallen in love with the French priest, she's more open to Roger and being kind to him, mm-hmm. and maybe trusting of him, whereas Kaya Loton, he, being in love with Joanne, is more protective of her and suspicious of Roger.
I like, though, that we see a softer side of Loton here, because obviously on the road, you know, it was tough to do that. And, you know, I like seeing them in their element in a way, and we realize this guy has a heart. And
yeah, he did a fantastic job.
He's
amazing. This actor, this is Braden Clark.
Yeah, he was amazing.
And nice guy, too. And
it's just being able to see her, the fierce warrior, but also the man beneath this that's so caring and vulnerable. And
I really do love the friendship between John Gray and Brianna. Is something that we were really looking forward to writing, and they just have a really cool chemistry between them. Love that he would do anything for her because of his love for Jamie, and she doesn't judge him, and she knows how that he has feelings for her father. And in a lot of ways, what they went through in the last episode kind of makes him safe for her, because he kind of got beyond all of the, you know, the male-female stuff. And now, like, he's a true friend, and, you know, she's not afraid of him. He's respectful of her, and he's one of the few people that she can really trust.
Especially feeling so alone this time. I mean, you're pregnant, you're young, you're in a completely alien time, you have no one to turn to. You know, Joe Costa is someone for her, but it's not the same thing. It's
I think he plays into her forgiveness of Jamie as well, because she sees how much he loves and trusts Jamie and reassures her that Jamie's doing his best. Oh, yeah, here's where Roger gets himself into trouble. We did some research to see what, you know, of the Mohawk customs and what might be considered rude to them. And one of the more interesting ones was that they don't point with their fingers. They sort of just tilt their head and, you know, lift their chin towards something when they're trying to indicate a direction. And they consider it highly rude. Is what we were told to point. So Roger doesn't know this, of course, and he just keeps doing the wrong thing.
And interrupting, which obviously, let's be honest, in most cultures is pretty obnoxious.
This village is just incredible, that what they built out there in Fascally Woods in Scotland. I was there for this block, and or the last two blocks, part of the last two blocks, and when you walked out there, you really felt like you were in definitely an Indian village. And the longhouses and everything, from the berries that were in these baskets, you know, everything's super authentic and super detailed. And it was like being, I don't know, at a camp or something for the weeks that we spent there. Every day you went there, you were just transported to a different time. Right. It was just,
I love this conversation, because once again, it's like Kai Loton is not, isn't trying to kill Roger. He's not trying to be mean to him. He just truly wants to understand why this guy was given up by his family and what he did that was so wrong. And, you know, and also I think for him culturally, he's like, you shouldn't be talking to this girl if you have feelings for somebody else. Like, he's just trying to understand Roger at this point. And
yeah, I mean, the very fact that Roger was sold by someone to
what did he do?
That means he's got to be a bad guy.
Yeah. This whole Father Alexandre storyline, you know, was a struggle for us because obviously in the book, you know, he has a very large part. And as we were breaking this down in the writer's room, you know, it was important to us that these scenes are more about Roger than Father Alexandre. And we kind of had to switch the focus slightly because no matter every iteration we did, it seemed like it was Father Alexandre's story and not Roger's story, and everything we felt needed to filter through our main character.
That's right. That is a big challenge of an episode like this or in any TV show. One of the first rules of if you're writing for a TV show is that the stories have to be about your main characters. Once in a while, there can be a guest character who has a big role, but when they do, even when you have a guest character, it has to be how the guest character's story impacts your main characters, and the story has to be filtered through them. It would be too disorienting to watch a show every week and it's about somebody else that you're never going to see again. It's just a tenet of TV that pretty much is true for every show. So we all loved this in the book. And for me especially, I remember one of the most shocking moments in the book reading it is when, obviously I'm getting ahead of ourselves, but what happens with Joeyon and Father Alexandre of her, you know, being willing to die with him and walking into that fire. I just remember just practically dropping the book when I read that. I loved it. And it was in my mind, like, we have to do this. But when we went to in the writer's room, you know, it did become a very big challenge because we kept saying, this story's so great, but it's so great for the priest. And it's got to be about Roger. Roger cannot be, our character cannot be a bystander in the story and just be like, wow, you have a cool story, you know, and be the sidekick. It just doesn't work that way. So we really had to work to find a way. But it's a testament to how much we did love that part of the book that we've tried to find a way to make this play off of Roger and his feelings and his predicament. And it wasn't that hard to do, really, in the end, because these two men are both where they are because of an affair of the heart, because they fell in love with a woman, and their love of a certain woman has brought them both to be captives in this place together. And they do have a lot of commonality. And so we did find some threads to pull through the Roger story of, you know, we talked a lot about in a relationship, you know, when do you give up? When would you go, hey, you know, I love this girl, but my God, ever since I met her, everything's gone wrong. We've broken up. We've had fights. You know, I chased her across time, and we still, you know, have so many obstacles that for Roger, it's like, do I keep chasing this person who probably looks like doesn't want me? I mean, her father beat him up. And as far as he knows, maybe she said bad things about him. And that's why Jamie did that. So he's really in the dark. And right now, I think he's in a place where he's questioning his relationship with Brianna.
Oh, absolutely, because you really wouldn't know. I mean, you know, last you left, you weren't on great terms. You know, I think Roger regrets most of the things he said to her and out of anger and, you know, doesn't know that she came looking for him, just like he went looking for her. Thinks her father, who he assumes is her father, beat him up. You know, he has to be questioning, but that's also part of good drama. It's, you know, giving a character a dilemma to wrestle with.
Yeah. So I think we looked at it through the prism of Roger's gone through so much and can't be with the woman he loves. And here's this priest who could be with the woman, but he is standing on principles and saying, I won't baptize this child. I'm not going to go against my, you know, my own principles and my, you know, his belief in God and what he was, you know, his calling in life. And Roger's like, just fake it. Just do it. Just do whatever you need to do. Your woman's right there. Your kid's right there. It would be so easy for you. So I think Roger's like, doesn't understand. And here's where they're clashing.
Sometimes during these podcasts, I think I've said this before, you find yourself watching the episode again.
Oh, well, I love
it. Instead of talking.
I know.
But these were difficult scenes just because, and I think, Tony, you've said this before, as writers, it's both fun and daunting to write some of these kind of two people scenes that are long. And for the actors, it's never easy, but there's such great material for them. And us to work with, it's like...
Yeah, absolutely. Outlander is a writer's dream for many, many reasons. One of them is how epic and big the story is, and that we get to write, battles and, things with huge crowd scenes, the witch trial where we had 200 extras in a church, or, some of the other episodes that have, where we've used magnificent locations, where we have amazing costumes, amazing sets, but the real, joy for a writer is to write scenes like this, where this is just two guys in a room. This is like a play, and their scenes together. And I think there's like four scenes where they're just talking. And it's just two guys. Like, there's nothing around them. They're in a hut, but the strength of the script and the words and the strength of the performances of these guys. That's where the magic is for us. And that is as satisfying to us as writing a giant battle scene or some big action scene, because this is all about the words and the emotion. And to have the freedom on this show to write, some of the longest scenes, this episode contains, I think, some of the longest scenes that have been in Outlander in the four seasons that we've done. Some of these scenes were like, I don't know, 8-page scenes. Yeah. I know there were, the garrison commander had long, long scenes. The reunion episode that Matt did had the really long scenes where you could just...
And let me just say, Studio Network hates long scenes like this. I mean, if anything, we have to kind of fight for these scenes, and certainly had to fight for the reunion scenes because, unfortunately, in TV, it's all about pace. That's the notes you always get. It's, if we, you have to pace it up and things have to keep moving. And it is not something that normally to networks, and we have great Stars and Sony are amazing. But in general, studios and networks don't like long, slow scenes. No. They don't want to see two people in a room just sitting there for extended periods of time. It's always something we have to kind of battle and work with. And some will really fight for this being one of them.
Yeah. I think they don't trust the audience to have the attention span. But we always say if the scenes are good, no one's going to get bored.
No, they're the most compelling.
The guy that just came to get Father Alexandre. Satalones. I know I'm probably not. I'm probably. It's been a while since we were in Scotland with these guys, so I'm trying to remember how to pronounce. But Gregory Ojig did an amazing job too. Both he and Braden. They were so funny together. Those two guys, Kyle Oton and Satalones. Yeah. They came out to me on the set, and they were like, "Hey, so we have a question. Which one of us is in charge?" So of course, I had to tell Satalones, I'm like, "Oh, you're in charge. You're the boss. You're over." He's like, "I'm over him, right? He has to do what I'm like, yeah." And then Kyle Oton, I'm like, "Oh, you are totally the boss here. You can tell him to do whatever. He's under you." Cause I think, both of them, they wanted to, I love their outfits too. I mean, Terry did an amazing job.
Terry and Nina did an awesome job.
I like the turquoise and the red. They look great together. I know some of the ladies in our post department had big crushes on these guys. I don't know if you remember, but during the playbacks, they were like, "Oh, we love them. Can they come back? We love the guy. He's so cute." And who knows? They might.
This scene's always in. Shout out to our makeup department for, as usual, doing an amazing job on all our prosthetics. I know this isn't real, and even I'm like...
Ooh. It's hard to watch. That's hard to watch. I think, the priestess has such a great dilemma here because, if he goes off with this woman that he's fallen in love with, he's basically abandoning God, his other love, and his calling. But if he stays a priest, he's abandoning the woman he fell in love with. And that's a really interesting dilemma to be between those two things. And
but I'm with Roger here. To me, there is no dilemma. It's
right.
It's choose the woman. It's like if your God won't forgive you for this, and I realize that's his calling, but... especially knowing that death awaits you.
Well, a lot of questions came up about this storyline. It sparked a lot of questions about, a lot of, I guess, the dilemmas of...
I understand the dilemma. I'm just in Roger's camp here. And certainly if you're a man of God, and a man of the cloth, certainly that dilemma is going to be, obviously.
Well, and the question, too, of why would the Mohawk be so angry at him, and why would they put him to death for not baptizing? But you have to understand that they didn't go to him, the Mohawk. He came to them, this priest, and said, I'm going to baptize you, and... He convinced them that this was the way to get into heaven, that this was the right way and God's will. And they all, they believed it and they followed his word and they got baptized. So then, and priests are few and far between. There aren't that many that are missionaries like he is. So they can't just find another priest. So essentially the priest is saying, I failed you and I can't do my job anymore because right. I have fallen from grace. I can't baptize anyone right. and I can't do, confession and give you absolution. He can't do the thing that he talked them into and promised them. Right. So it is natural that they would be very upset and feel abandoned and feel like, is this all a fraud? Is this what's, and so that's why the priest, he feels he'd be inauthentic to do this when he is disappointed in himself. So it's a very complicated dilemma.
This is, I think, also the breaking point for Roger and what we start the start of his idiot speech that he at this point has kind of given up. Like, and Roger is a very caring, giving, loyal guy, but we've pushed him to the point of breaking. And Richard Rankin does such an amazing job in this speech. I cry every time I look at it.
This is a heartbreaking speech. And God bless Richard Rankin because this was, there were some last minute rewrites, some additions to, I think we liked this speech so much. We actually added material to it. And kind of, I think he got it like the night before. And it was like, good news is we have some more words for you. Bad news is you gotta know them by tomorrow morning. And he didn't blink. He memorized this and he freaking nails it.
And at this point that he is really trying to convince himself that he's going to put himself first. And I think he wants to believe it. I don't think he's ever going to obviously do that, but he's really trying to convince himself. He's like, you're an idiot, Father Alexandra, and I'm an idiot.
Yeah. Well, this is about survival at this point. Yeah, he's not even thinking that he has a chance to get Brianna back. He's not like, do I want to, I want to get back in a relationship? I don't know. He's,
you're right.
His life's
survival.
In danger here. And he,
you're right. It's just like, I just got to get out of here. But now, and we're getting, a lot of people have asked if Roger at the Stones was going to go through or wasn't going to go through, and obviously got caught at the last minute by the Mohawk. We have always talked about the fact, though, that, we wanted the audience to wonder if he went or not and make their own decision on that. But we, as a group, always assumed he would never have gone. He just wouldn't. I mean, his love for Brianna is too strong. He wasn't going to go through.
But it's natural that here he might feel some regret about that. Yes. Like, maybe that was a dumb decision.
Yeah, because he thinks he's going to be in this life forever. He thinks his fate might turn into Father Alexandre.
Yeah.
Andre. I love Roger's like, yes, put yourself first. But also, he's been without Brianna for so long at this point. He really has to, you're right. It's all about being survivalist mode at this point. It's like, how am I going to protect myself?
This guy is a professor.
Yeah, exactly.
The things that he has happened to him in the 18th century has not been so kind to Roger. And by the way, we also love, the sort of spiritual connection here, because Roger was raised by a minister and he has that part of him inside of him that obviously has a strong spiritual connection to religion and the priest asks Roger, ironically, pray for me. And Roger at first is kind of like, me? I'm not a priest. What am I supposed to? But he does end up praying for him. And there is a part of Roger that's connected to his spiritual side through Reverend Wakefield, who raised him. And he's accessing that here, maybe for the first time. It's sparking something in him. He's like, dude, I don't have a chance. I can't get back with my woman. Yeah. You can. Why are you hesitating?
At this point, Roger thinks I've totally convinced this guy. Surely I've convinced him.
He makes a good argument. And that hut is real, by the way. It's actually made of leaves. Like, it's kind of beautiful from inside of it when the sun comes in and it just glows. And it was right on a lake, this real lake. That when we were shooting this, was some of the hottest days ever in Scottish history.
I know, it's amazing.
It was
like 80.
It was in the high 80s, even low 90s. I think it went up to 91. Do you know the sound guys, actually, they told me this, went swimming in that lake in the morning before we started shooting. They actually peeled their shirts off, jumped in, swam across to the other bank and back. And I said to them, are you insane? Because even in the hottest day in Scotland, that water's got to be freezing. But they were so thrilled because to them that was a real treat to get to swim because of how hot it was.
That's like unheard of. In my 5 years in Scotland, I'm not sure I've ever felt that kind of warmth.
No. this actor,
Jan
Tual. I'm not sure if that's how you say his last name, but he did an amazing job. I mean, the intensity of their relationship in this short time.
Well, they're both, as you said before, I mean, there are so many parallels in their relationship that they're both, you know, in this position because of the women they love and are choosing completely mm-hmm. opposite paths here.
I feel Kai Lotan, he did such a great job there. I feel that he is, he's disappointed. It, like, I think he was wishing the priest would save himself. Like, he...
I don't know about that.
I don't know.
Knowing how he feels about
Joey. Yes, he feels about Joey Young, but he just looks away like...
Well, I think it's also comprehensible at this point that...
Yeah, that's true.
That this person is going to sacrifice, but as you said, you know, he feels a strong faith in God, and that is his purpose. And if he has failed his main purpose, then life doesn't mean exactly what it meant before. You know, this is also, you know, something we do in editing a lot, and certainly scripts is, you know, when you have two parallel storylines,
right.
It's like, how do they fit together? It's like, when you cut away, because you're so into this Roger... Father Alexandra moment.
Yeah.
You know, when are, oh, right, exactly, we're cutting back to Brianna. And it's something we do in the scripts, but then obviously go back and forth in editing. And it's like putting together a puzzle sometimes.
Now, the scene where Brianna goes to see Stephen Bonnet in jail, I have to say, is probably the most hotly debated scene in the writer's room. We had the most... spirited discussions about this scene maybe than anything else this whole season, because there were many writers who felt that Brianna wouldn't why would she go there and given the knowledge that she was pregnant and let him know she was going to have a baby, even though in the book she goes, you know, with a thought to possibly forgive him, as her father's letter urged her to, you know, we did discuss, should we have her go there instead and be like, you know, forget that. I'm not going to go and apologize. I'm not going to go let him know about this baby. I'm going to go and tell him off. I'm going to be strong and I'm going to, and there's something to that. I mean, maybe, you know, that's certainly what some people would have done, gone there face to face and told him what a jerk he was and how much anger she had and she's glad he's going to die and all that. But there's also something to Brianna wanting to go and be the bigger person and take the high road and say, since you're already going to die, you're going to die. But her way of getting closure was to give him this thing of, I want you to know a piece of you will survive, even if you don't deserve it. Yeah. You know, she's not saying he deserves it, but she's taking the high road so that she can have closure. And so in the end, we kind of did a combo of both, and we did it a little differently, kept the best parts of the book that we liked of this scene, which is most of the scene, but we had her make it the turn where even after she gives him this gift and tells him, you know, I'm here to forgive you and there is a baby, he still taunts her. Yeah. He's not comforted by that, and he's an asshole.
Well, he is who he is.
And then she's like, okay, all bets are off now. And then she lashes out at him and gives him, you know, lets some of her rage out. So it's kind of a combo.
But also, I think when she goes here, she's trying very hard. I mean, she's never going to forget, obviously, what happened. It's never going to be fully healed.
No.
She is trying to figure out how she can move on. And I think she really truly believes here that this child is Bonnet. She's hoping it's Rogers.
But yeah.
She does, knows. I think, have a very huge fear here that it is Bonnet.
Of course.
And is trying to be a bigger person. And yes, as you said, you know, when she realized this is wasted on him. And quite honestly, there's no point in giving him this gift, she's going to raise his child, you know, without him and to be a much better person.
Right. But like this, it's not really about him and how he takes her gesture. The fact that she was, she made that decision and did it, and she felt she had to do this. She gets what she came for in some ways, because she said her piece.
Also, it's off of Jamie's letter. It's you know, even he said, you know, as you said before, it's like, did killing Blackjack make you feel better? And he was, no, it didn't. You know, it's trying to figure out a way that you can survive.
Yeah. I mean, it takes an enormous amount of strength. And I think we see Jamie's strength in her here, that she could walk into this prison, you know, that she could walk in and face this man, be a few feet away from him and just hold her ground. I think that, you know, shows enormous bravery and control. It gives her something for sure.
Well, I think
he's,
you know, anyone wants the ability to be able to confront their attacker and be able to say how much you hurt me and how devastating this was, and will that give me some sort of peace or comfort?
Yeah. Well, it gives her agency. You know, she's in control of this. She made a decision to go there. She did it.
But that's a problem. It never goes as planned. Like, everything you think in your mind that he's going to respond the way I want, and he's going to hear this, and maybe he's going to have some shred of humanity.
Yeah. Well, that, to me, that line, I don't want anything from you.
Yeah.
I came here to give you something. So it's not necessarily about the niceness of, I'm going to give you something. Yes. It's about, this is my scene. I'm calling the shots. Mm-hmm. And I don't need anything from you.
Yeah. We also talk about turns a lot for the writers in the scene, like, which always makes a good scene correct. That, you know, you want to enter a scene with a character going towards one objective, but something turns in it and takes them off to a different path.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys try to do that in every scene?
I mean, we do. That's what makes an interesting scene, is the turns and the arcs in the scene. If the scene doesn't go anywhere, it's not very intriguing. And I think here there's a lot of turns, because now we see her anger. This baby will not know you existed. And she's claiming, this is my child. This isn't your, even if it's his, it's not yours. Yes. It will never be yours. And there was also a lot of discussion about whether her speech got to Bonnet at all.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's why he gives her the...
Yeah, why does he give her that? We were like... And, of course, nobody really... It's all open to interpretation. We interpret the book differently maybe than Diana meant in some parts. The audience interprets these scenes differently maybe than how we meant. It's to me, I think she got to Bonnet. I don't think he's a nice guy or that he had a soft moment, but I think something got to him.
I like to believe that the reason he did it is because he is like, oh, great. It's not even like, oh, I feel a softness towards my future child. It's that, oh, great. A part of me is going to live on, and he better live on I want him to prosper. It's a selfish.
Yeah.
You know, Bonnet, everything Bonnet does is selfish.
Yeah.
So it got to him, but maybe not in the way we would expect a normal,
I think Ed Spilliers gave a lot of depth to him in that moment when he says, take care of him.
And also,
I felt something. Oh, I totally. Felt something. Sometimes you feel something, you don't even know exactly what it is, but if the scene made you feel.
But that's what makes a good villain. Do you know what I mean? Some of the best villains are people you're kind of not rooting for, but you sometimes at moments feel empathy for them, which you then can't understand why you would ever do that. And obviously this is what we talked about before, the fact that we obviously adjusted the scene. It's not like it is in the book with Murchison coming out and Bonnet helping to carry Lord John out. And you know, with the addition of Murtaugh, things had to also switch. Damn that Murtaugh.
Yeah. Well, it seems like this, we have to distill down to what is this scene really about and what's the important thing. And the important thing is emotion of Brianna and not, you know, all of the action. And, I mean, we have a little bit of action and a nice explosion here. And,
I love there's always this intense animosity between Lord John and Murtaugh.
We have this saying in the writer's room that I can't remember how it got coined, but it's called all cats out of all bags. Mm. And it frequently happens. It happens more than you would think, where suddenly all these secrets or all these things come together in one moment. And we always laugh and go, oh, all cats out of all bags. And I think this is one of those scenes where it's like, wait, Murtaugh's here. John Gray's here. Brianna's here. You know, everybody's like, what are you doing? And,
yeah, of course, no one cares about Bonnie.
Well, we did see those.
We can leave that guy here today.
Yeah. We saw those keys, so.
But that was another thing we debated. It's, you know, does Bonnet live? Does Bonnet not live? We decided to keep that as a cliffhanger moment.
Right. I thought that was a pretty good explosion.
Our special effects team is pretty good.
Yeah, they do a good job.
And I love that Marsley is like the getaway car.
We love that Marsley is like, you know.
She's a lady with spirit, as Jamie says.
She's not
Claire.
One of these, you know. She's like, I'm your wife. I'm going to be with you. I'm in on all the fun, and I'm in on all the danger. I'm all in.
Exactly.
She doesn't, you know.
This makes me cry every time. I mean, Roger, once again, I'm putting myself first. Screw everybody else. I'm getting out of here. But we're going to see the real Roger come out here. The Roger who realizes I've been lying to myself. I could never be that selfish. I cannot let this innocent guy die.
All of that bravado, and we've...
I do love Brianna. This is crazy.
Yeah.
I can't possibly do what I'm setting out to do.
John Gray has the best poker face, doesn't he? He he's gotten the Frasers out of a lot of jams. He's a superhero. And speaking of superheroes.
Yes. Still trying to convince himself here.
I love how he's just talking to himself there, and he's just...
And you just realize he's just like, I'm just not this guy. He's put other people, you know, has to put myself first.
This is a good man, and this is why we love Roger.
I know, for once in your idiotic life, be smart.
It's just not in his makeup. It's just not in his DNA. He's not a coward or a quitter. He is a dog with a bone, as we've said
before.
He's
also a really caring guy. I mean, you know, he's just incapable of not helping someone in need. You know, Tony and I really fought for this song. It's Adagio for Strings. We loved it. And, you know, in editing, sometimes you get what's called temp love, where they put in temporary music and when you're watching the early cuts, and then you get to the real music, which, by the way, Bear's done an amazing job. But you're so used to hearing these scenes with the original music that sometimes it's hard to give it up. Mm-hmm. We just thought this was so lovely. You know, several of the men in our group were like, yeah, it's from Platoon. We're like, who's going to know that? Like, why Platoon? What? And while that is true, it's just such an affecting piece of music.
And, we cried every single time. We see these cuts over and over and over again. And if you cry every single time you see it, even and never get tired of it, and it moves you every single time, you know something's working. And, maybe some people have seen that movie, but this is just a familiar piece of music and a gorgeous piece of music, and it just worked. It just worked with this scene.
It's haunting.
Oh, this is heartbreaking. I can barely watch this. I just think...
This was a tough scene. This was a tough scene to choreograph, though, also, because we are trying to shorthand the fact that Roger, kind of in this moment, realizes, how can I won't be able to save this priest, but how can I quicken, hasten his death so he's not suffering?
Yeah, and
he takes this, you know.
It's a barrel of whiskey, which I think there was some concern, will people know? And I said, I think they'll know when it explodes in the fire.
But the hope is, obviously, because this whole scene was without dialogue, he's hoping to hasten his death so he doesn't suffer, because obviously he's suffering.
And I think this is a big twist, because I think a lot of TV audiences are they think, oh, the hero's coming to the rescue, he's gonna save him, and he doesn't save him. And I think
it's
shocking.
He knows he can't,
but I think I think some TV viewers, it happens on other shows that they get there somehow, cut the guy down and drag him out. And this is more authentic. I mean, this is, we're not trying, it's not a feel good.
But also, I will say another thing that was hotly debated is, obviously in the book, very similar, Joey Han sacrifices herself as well, leaves her child. It was very hard to understand why she would do this. We get she has a great love. Obviously, one would question if Jamie and Claire would do this, because they have the greatest love story. But how do we... There's so many mothers in the room, it's like, who were like, how could she leave her child? It's, can we do this story? Is it believable? Is it...
This is one decision this woman makes. And not every woman would make a decision, but... This is a unique character. She makes this decision. I'm sure she feels like the child will be taken care of by, you know, the other women in the village. And at that moment, she makes a rash and passionate, irreversible decision. And it's heartbreaking. And I think this is one of the most shocking moments ever that we've ever had on Outlander. I think... It shocks me every time I see it.
But I actually love that Kylo Tan goes over and you're like, oh, is he going to raise this? I mean, he's so heartbroken over Joey Han, but
he's he takes the baby.
This and part of you I'm going to keep and cherish.
And he's devastated. He loved. This is a lot about love stories going on here. And not all of them with happy endings, and the
none
emotion
of them
with happy on it. Look at his. Well, none of them.
I mean, right now,
not at the moment. And we really had a fire there. That was a stunt woman.
Yeah, did an amazing
who
job.
Did him so, who actually walked in that fire and hugged the priest, and it's just.
Makes me cry every time.
This is a devastating episode. I just love it.
Only one episode left.
That's devastating. That's devastating as well, because what are we going to do with our afternoons when we don't have the podcast?
Work on season 5.
Oh, that's right. Yep. Well,
thank you, everybody. And thank you for, Tony, for inviting me in here again. It's so lovely. And almost another year down. It's crazy.
I'm already looking forward to season 5. So I'll see you after next week. We'll see you next year.
Exactly. Thanks, everyone.
But thanks for joining us. So sorry we bummed you out. But if it made you cry, I think that makes me really happy, because that means we're doing a job. So we'll see you next time.